Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, Yeah.
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
John Crowley, my man, stop talking into my ear. Good morning! Happy Tuesday. I'm glad you made it. We made it past the Monday. Is there any other Monday after, like, you know, a week where we're dreading work more than after Thanksgiving week? Because we have a couple of days off, and then we come back on Monday, then we realize that we're back at work, but not here. Because here, we're talking about sports. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. 888-957-9570 is the number to call in if you want to get in on the conversation. I want to talk about, coming up a little later today, I want to talk about the 49ers running backs, because I think Raheem Mostert, what we were looking for against the Ravens was how they were going to attack them, right? And we were wondering, is Jimmy Garoppolo going to be the dude who's going to have to take over in this game? Or since it's wet, you know, it's going to be rainy, are they going to have to rely on the run game? And a big reason why they stuck in it was because Raheem Mostert was getting them some big yardage. So I want to talk about the 49ers running backs a little later on today. We got some sound to get to from Kyle Shanahan. He was on a press conference talking to the Bay Area media yesterday, and he had some comments regarding Richard Sherman that I want to talk about in the NFC playoff picture. Well, last night, the Seahawks and the Vikings game, it shook some things up. And don't look at a score and act like that it was a close game. It was not close. Just so happened that a couple of fumbles and a really odd interception by Russell Wilson, a tip drill interception by Russell Wilson, if that's what you want to call it. I don't know what you call that. Just bad luck is what you call that. But that score does not reflect how that game went. The Seahawks absolutely dominated that game. But that shook up the NFC playoff picture a little bit, so I want to talk about that too. But I do want to talk about the Raiders and their loss to the Chiefs, 40-9. And I didn't talk about them at all yesterday because, quite frankly, I didn't feel like that game deserved to be talked about yesterday, considering we had the Niners and the Ravens and how exciting that game was. And if you're any football fan, you'd agree that you would 100% take that game, 49ers-Ravens, over that Raiders versus Chiefs game anytime. But I am finding just these weird patterns in every single one of these Raiders losses. And I think the thing that not only separates them from the good teams in football, the Raiders are always right on the cusp. Last year they weren't. They weren't. They were just out of it because they had the whole Mac situation. Derek Carr couldn't get used to John Gruden's offense. It was a dumpster fire last year. But then, you know, this year you're wondering,
what the hell's going on, man?
Took a while to get that drop out there, but you're wondering what the hell's going on, man. And one of the patterns that I've seen in what separates them from these good teams right now is just the fact that they can't come back from when, you know, they make these stupid plays. It's just their lack of kind of sticking in the game, and their defense doesn't give the offense much of a chance, but they did in the beginning of the game. There were multiple times where the Raiders defense kept them in it, at least in the first and second quarter, and the Raiders offense had a chance. And there's one drive that I look at which kind of just explains the frustration. Now, at the beginning, we had the interception. All right, bad throw by Carr, interceptions. They happened at the beginning of the game. You can bounce back from that. And then it goes straight to a Kansas City Chiefs touchdown, 7-0. Okay. Well, you know what? That's not game over, exactly. It's not a great start, but also it's not game over. I mean, let's look at what the last Chiefs-Raiders matchup. Chiefs were down 10. They managed to score 28 in the second. So 7-0. All right, fine. Then Trevor Davis goes out and fumbles. Okay. Still 7-0. Chiefs got the ball back. But then you hold the Chiefs on 4 downs and they turn the ball over on your own 24. Then 7 plays for 15 yards. Or rather, 62 yards, my bad. They were on the 15, and they ran 7 plays for 62 yards. You know what that ended up? You know what that ended up being? A punt. You don't run a drive that's 7 plays and 62 yards and end on a punt. That is just deflating. And then you're like, all right, well, hopefully the defense can keep them in it. And you know what? They did. And they forced the Chiefs to punt again, and it was 7-0. And then you have the Trevor Davis not being able to turn upfield, and then they turn it over on downs, and the Chiefs go back and score a touchdown, and that's the point where you're just done. That's where everything is just, you're just like thinking, okay, this team is not looking great. Then we have the pick six, 21-0, game over already in the first half. And you find these similar things going on with the Raiders in every single one of these losses. And I look back to the one against the Packers when Derek Carr fumbled in the end zone. And then they just had the deep ball to the guy with long brown hair who I'd never heard of in my life, who was playing what? Man, what was he playing beforehand? He was playing like, I think he played in like Division II football or something. He wasn't even playing in regular college games. He was playing in like some other division. And then he goes out and he does that, scores again, and then you're down by 2 scores going into the half. It's like there are these plays that just kill everything. And look, you got to make sense of the fact that, hey, the defense is probably not going to do much to keep him in it. So if the offense isn't going to get anything going, you can't really trust it. But I want to know from you, Chilton Auto Body Text Line, 957-95-888-957-9570. What do you feel like the biggest issue has been so far this year? Now, they're 6-6, but it feels like they're 4-8 right now. That's kind of how I was feeling after that game. After they go ahead, lose to the Jets, who have already lost to the Dolphins and now lost to the Bengals. So they're just helping any winless team out there. And then they go ahead and do this against the Chiefs in a big spot in Arrowhead. Derek Carr continues to underperform in Arrowhead. But I want to know from you, Chilton Auto Body Text Line, 95795 or 888-957-9570 is the number. But what has been your biggest issue so far for the Raiders? And I would say that mine, offensively, has just been that they don't have the weapons at wide receiver that they need.
What the hell's going on, man?
I mean, there was one guy who left at the beginning of the season, and we don't really want to talk about him. I don't know if he's going to be making his way back to the NFL anymore. Tom Brady's having his own problems. But you know what? I'm actually kind of looking at the Raiders situation similar to that in the Patriots situation. And I know that sounds crazy, and I'm not talking about their win-loss record, but I'm just talking specifically about how Tom Brady works with the weapons around him. Because he's still got a relatively new bunch over there in New England, and they haven't figured it out yet. And one thing you have to trust with New England is that they will. But the Raiders now, they have this bunch, and besides Darren Waller, it doesn't feel like any of these wide receivers can get any sort of separation. He's still trying to get in touch with Zay Jones, who ended up being the leading receiver with 2 receptions. Tyrell Williams hasn't looked the same since he's come off that injury. Darren Waller's been your top guy, but if you get one more wide receiver, then this offense could look a little different. But from the 510, Derek Carr doesn't love football anymore. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say he doesn't love football anymore. That's a little bit extreme. Just to say that a football player doesn't love football. I mean, look, Derek Carr doesn't strike me as that type of dude. But I will say this. the short passes, you know, getting yards with Josh Jacobs, it was working in the beginning, but now defenses have figured it out. They're not able to get any yards after contact on these short passes. These little chunk plays, they're not happening anymore. They're not happening one little bit. So they figured that part out. He's managed to get a couple of deep balls up to Darren Waller every now and then. But other than that, it doesn't seem like the receivers can get any separation. From the 510, my frustration with the Raiders is that I've never seen us have a good defense in my, all caps, life. And I'm with you there. I'm still a relatively young Raider fan. I have been, and I'm still, you know, I haven't really watched them have a solid defense, really, since the Super Bowl teams. Or the Super Bowl team, rather. But yeah, in the past 15, 20 years, they really haven't had that good of a defense. And I'm not going to lie, I harp back on these times with Khalil Mack and what he could have brought, and just all the draft possibilities that they could have had after that, just thinking that they could have had Khalil Mack and Derwin James. But this is the team they have now, and it looks like they made good draft picks. They got Jonathan Abram, they got Max Crosby, and that's fine. Cleveland Furl, got to give him a little time to develop. He's looked pretty good the past few games. And, I mean, they got the young guys with P.J. Hall, Mo Hurst, who seem to be pretty good on the inside. You got LaMarcus Joyner, who you signed to a big contract, so you're going to be sticking with him. I think the Raider defense could look good, but we're going to have to wait till Vegas. We're going to have to wait till Vegas. From the 408, the Raiders are very inconsistent and don't know how to finish games. There are times they show up and play, then there are times the Raiders can't catch a ball to save their lives. We need consistency. And I'm kind of like shocked at the notion of just all these people that are saying, you know, they're going to be without Derek Carr. They're predicting they're going to be without Derek Carr. They're going to predict they're going to be without Derek Carr. And I don't know if he's the quarterback that's going to get you to the Super Bowl, but I do know that he's going to be the quarterback John Gruden will stick with at least for one or two seasons over there in Vegas. I do know that. From the 925, Carr is broken, scared, can't throw further than 15 yards down the field. That's the thing. The problem is you've seen him make those throws down the field before. These plays that he's made to Foster Moreau, to even Tyrell Williams, every now and then at the beginning of the season, you figure chunk play, chunk play, chunk play, chunk play, chunk play. And then just a big, long pass to actually get them downfield and then maybe start getting some scoring going. That doesn't happen. Doesn't happen anymore. So I just don't get it. I don't really see their season going much more further than just second place in the AFC West. Not going to make the AFC wild card. From the 925, they have to man up and play better in cold weather games. Sure, man up and play better in cold weather. It's easy to say. Hello, Ratto. How are you doing? All right. Coming up, I want to talk about these 49er running backs. I find it interesting because Raheem Mostert shook some things up a bit. Since the last 4 weeks, you have not seen the Niner running game just be like the Niner running game that they have been. And I think that this one against the Ravens kind of shook some things up. You're going to hear from Jerry Rice. He's going to be the interview of the day. He was on with Jolo and Dibs yesterday, so you'll hear from Jerry Rice, and then you'll hear from Kyle Shanahan on conference call yesterday talking about Richard Sherman's chances of playing and also the debut of Kevon Looney and the Damian Jones revenge game for the Atlanta Hawks. That's all coming up. Stephen Langford on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
Feel free to contact the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795, 888-957-9570. In case you didn't know, I am Stephen Langford. Thanks for joining me on this lovely Tuesday morning. Not going to lie, I walked outside without a sweater on because I left my hoodie in my car as I was on my way up here. It was about 3 in the morning, and turned out that it wasn't even that cold outside. So shout out to the weather. December 3rd. Oh, man. So I do want to talk about these 49ers running backs because what are we to make of just Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida coming back when you had Raheem Mostert do what he did. It seems like any time Raheem Mostert has gotten an opportunity, he's managed to capitalize on it. Now, he hasn't gotten many. He hasn't gotten many to have more than 10-plus carries. But if you look at the only two games where he had, where he knew that he was going to be the guy, right? When you're running back and you have that mindset, like coach tells you, like Shanahan walks up to him in his sick Yeezys in that dope hat that no other coach seems to be wearing, but only Kyle Shanahan can rock. He walks up to you, you're Raheem Mostert, and he's like, look, man, we're going to be using you a lot today, so be prepared. Then Raheem Mostert gets into that mindset, gets into that frame, gets into his OPL. Shout out to Mr. Jackson over in Irvington High School for teaching us that. His OPL, right? His optimum performance level. And in his head, he's like, I'm going to go. All right, I'm ready to do this. And whenever he's gotten the opportunity, when he knows he's going to be the guy, whether it was Matt Breida being hurt or Tevin Coleman being hurt, 13 rushes for 83 yards. That was in week two. That was against the Bengals. 12 rushes for 79 yards. That was against Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's run defense really isn't bad. That's what's kept him alive. Then 9 rushes for 60 against the Panthers. Panthers run defense, not all that great. And a big reason they used Raheem Mostert in that game toward the end was just because they had such a big lead. And then you go to this game, 19 rushes for 146 yards and a touchdown. And I originally went to this this topic. I was thinking about it yesterday, and I'm thinking, look, Matt Breida's that big play guy. If you manage to just at least create a lane for him, then he's going to burst through it, and he could burst through it for 30, 35 yards easy, no problem. But I'm thinking the same for Raheem Mostert, though. Now, if you look at these next-gen stats and you talk about the fastest ball carriers in the NFL, and you talk about the guys who have reached a top speed, you know, depending on if it's a wide receiver or a running back, sometimes a quarterback whenever you're talking about Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray, but it's mostly wide receivers or running backs. Raheem Mostert, now Matt Breida already has a top spot. Matt Breida reached a top speed of 22.6 miles an hour. That's the fastest anyone's ran so far this season. But every single week Raheem Mostert runs the ball, he's always in the top 20 every week as far as guys who have reached a top speed. And Charles Davis was doing a fantastic job of pointing out what the 49ers need to do on offense to counter the Ravens on defense. Now, the Ravens were running a base 3-4, right? So they had three defensive linemen and four linebackers. Two of those linebackers could act as pass rushers, or they just choose to have one of those linebackers act as pass rushers. That's what a whole 3-4 situation's about. It's a little football knowledge, sort of. But they said that basically it was going to be important for Daniel Brunskill on the left side, Mike McGlinchey on the right side, and George Kittle on also, depending on whichever side they were running the ball, depending on whether they're going the strong or the weak side, it was up to them to kind of seal off that edge, not let the pass rusher set that edge, and then have Raheem Mostert just run around him. And he had all the success in the world bouncing to the outside. That's why he got his yardage was so just huge. But I'm wondering, though, and I want to know from you, Chilton Auto Body text line 95795 888-957-9570. Do you want to see Raheem Mostert be that second guy? And I got nothing against Tevin Coleman. I've always liked Tevin Coleman since his days in Atlanta. Always liked Tevin Coleman. But lately, since the Cardinals game, 12 rushes for 23, 9 for 40, 12 for 14, 11 for 39, 5 for 6. Now, I think that if Matt Breida, I mentioned that he's that big play running back, right? It's so easy for him just to get 35 to 40 yards. But also, if the offensive line isn't doing their job and he's not getting the blocking, there's situations where Matt Breida hasn't had the best of games. And that's where, you know, after Cleveland, 13 for 36, 8 for 35, 11 for 35, 15 for 78 against Arizona, and then 10 for 18 against Seattle. And can you trust Matt Breida to be the same Matt Breida that he was coming off the injury? So I think in this upcoming matchup against the Saints, if you can split the carries between Raheem Mostert and Matt Breida, and then just use Tevin Coleman primarily as a receiver, put him out wide on certain situations, give him some more targets. He's only had a maximum amount of targets of 4 so far this season. I mean, you expect the guy to have more than 4 targets, considering he was that receiver-type running back, that dual threat that was always so good with Kyle Shanahan's offense in Atlanta. But I do want to know from you, Chilton Autobody text line 957-955-888-957-9570. From the 510, Raheem Mostert just seems to be a different cat. But I still have faith that Breida and Coleman can get it done, so I just think that this has given me more confidence. Yeah, I see that. Because just now you know that Raheem Mostert can be that guy if he really needs to be. But also if Matt Breida and Tevin Coleman just happen to have big days, then you could have 3 big threat running backs. Three just guys that could actually get you some yards. That's why the 49ers rushing attack has been so crazy. Now, in the past 4 weeks, they hadn't reached as a team more than 112 yards before. As a team. From the 650, whenever Mostert gets carries between the 3, he gets downhill the fastest, it seems. That's Drake from Mountain View. And he just feels stronger. I don't know, not only was he just getting downfield, now he wasn't exactly just going north to south, he was going east to west also in this game, but he was breaking tackles, he was juking guys. Whenever Mostert gets the carries, it does seem like he has a little more flair, a little more flavor. That was Drake from Mountain View, by the way. Shout out to Drake. He's always chilling on the pregame show. But, you know, it just feels like now there needs to be some sort of change in the plan, and it feels like, you know, these screen passes or these swing passes that they continue to throw to the wide receivers, I think you can work Tevin Coleman into that just as well. I really do. And it's not to knock Tevin Coleman. I mean, you're still going to, I mean, what's his contract up? I think you still got him for another season. So I think if you find a way to use him, if you just use him as a versatile, kind of diverse running back that he is, yeah, I think there can be nothing but positives coming out of this season. So we got some interesting shakeups in the NFC from the 510. Wilson also looks good when given the opportunity. He does. You never know with Jeff Wilson, because he was put on the practice squad for a reason. Every single time, now the past couple of years, whenever he's gone, you know, whenever he's had his chances, last season, when it just felt like everyone was going down with an injury at running back and you had Jeff Wilson Jr. in there, you liked him. And then this preseason, everyone was kind of wondering what was going to happen with him. And then they put him on the practice squad at first. It was like, why? So there's something there that they know that we don't know. From, you know, just the optics of it may look good, but there's something that they see that we just don't see. But he has looked good given the opportunity. And I mean, he's that red zone threat that any team would want. But this NFC playoff picture, though, I don't know how this shook up yesterday, but it looks like the Saints are the first seed, the Seahawks are the second seed, and now the 49ers are the 5th seed. Right behind the Cowboys, who are the 4th seed at 6-6. And the Packers, who are the 3rd seed. Then you got the Vikings, who are the 6th seed at 8-4. Now, it all depends on the conference games that they've won, the division games that they've won, and all that situation. So with the Seahawks, I get it because, you know, the 49ers lost to the Seahawks, so the Seahawks have one more division win than they do. So I get the Seahawks one, but I don't really understand what's to come with the Cowboys. But that's what it would shake up to be right now, is the Saints and Seahawks would have that first round bye, and the 49ers would be playing the Cowboys, and the Vikings would be playing the Packers. The Cowboys, have you seen who they've beaten? Can I pull up who the Cowboys have beaten? Hang on. Let me just check up the wording on that's not that great. Let me check, though, because the teams that they've beaten so far, they're not very good. All right, let's check it out. Giants, Redskins,
Dolphins, lost to the Jets, lost to the Packers. They beat the Eagles. We thought that was a really good one because we considered the Eagles to be one of the deepest teams in the league, but they just don't look like they know what they're doing. And then the Giants. It's like, and the Lions. So, Giants, Lions, Eagles, Dolphins, Redskins, and Giants again. They haven't beaten anybody, and they are a higher seed than the 49ers right now. I don't get it. I don't get it. This playoff format, there's a whole bunch that goes into it. I probably should do a little more research, but just them being the fifth seed right now, or the fifth seed compared to the Cowboys being the fourth seed, it's just like, wow. Can't believe it. The NFC East is just, they're no good. You know? Top seed always gets in. The NFC East is just no good. Could we be seeing another 7-9 division leader getting in like the Seahawks did that one year and then, you know, have Marshawn Lynch do that beast mode run? Is that where they're heading right now? Are we heading to a point where the Cowboys are going to be getting in at 7-9 and then we're going to have Ezekiel Elliott bust out a huge run to whoever that fifth seed is going to be? I don't think they're going to be any other seed. Ooh. Is that where we're heading? Ezekiel Elliott's going to just leap his way into superstardom, kind of like Marshawn Lynch did after that run? Is that where they're headed? Gosh. From the 510, Niners will blow out the Saints. Drew Brees is such an immobile quarterback. I don't have any other reason than to believe that this 49ers defense is going to sack him more than he's been sacked any time this season. They're going to be using Taysom Hill a lot. That's the one guy I'm going to be looking for. Taysom Hill is a, Taysom Hill, he's legit. I don't know all the different ways they use him. I don't know how they came up with it. I don't know how Sean Payton came up with it. But Taysom Hill, he's an athletic, number seven, looking like a backup quarterback guy. So he's the one you're going to have to watch out for. But I think they're going to get to Drew Brees a lot. I do think they are, they're up there. All right, coming up. Going to hear from Jerry Rice. It's going to be our interview of the day. Chilton Autobody text line 95795 888-957-9570. But coming up, you're going to hear from Jerry Rice, and then you're going to hear from Kyle Shanahan. And I want to talk about the debut of Kevon Looney. The sort of the season debut. He played for, 10 minutes in that first game and then went out. So I do want to talk about the return of Kevon Looney and kind of a revenge game for a certain warrior who is on the Hawks. The two worst teams going at it. It's kind of like if the Bengals were playing the Redskins. That's what it was last night. We'll get into all that next. Stephen Langford and on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
Now, if you've tuned into the pregame show before and if you've been awake at 5 a.m. and this is your everyday listening thing, whatever I want to call it, I do this little segment, and we're going to get to the Jerry Rice interview from Jolo and Dibs yesterday. That's going to be our interview of the day today. That's also a new thing we're bringing into the show. But fantasy football frustrations. It's playoffs coming up. And either you're really happy right now or, just really sad and you don't know what to do. Because you've had all the time in the world to plan out everything going on with fantasy football, and it's been taken up the past 14 weeks of your life. You've been stressing over it, who to pick up on the waiver wire, should I bench this guy, should I put this guy in my flex, all that sort of stuff. But feel free to chime in. Chilton Autobody text line 95795, 888-957-9570. If you have any sort of fantasy football frustrations. My biggest one is that I did not make it in the work league. Do you know how embarrassing it is when you don't make it in your own work league, especially working at a sports talk radio station? Then everyone has bragging rights for the rest of the season. Well, I know more about football than you do. I know more. I need a guru to get that win over Bonte, man. He was playing Bonte in this last week. I needed my man Guru to get that dub. But now Butcher Boy took over the spot. I'm in seventh. He's in sixth out of a 12-team league. And Butcher Boy took over and,
clearly, we all know what Butcher Boy really wants.
I want to go back to the playoffs!
And you're back in the playoffs, Butcher. Congratulations. You're back in the playoffs over me. All right, here is the interview of the day. This was Jerry Rice. He joined Joe Lo and Dibs yesterday to talk about the 49ers' loss to the Ravens, and he is brought to you by the Dialpad Guest Line.
Hall of Famer, three-time Super Bowl champ, 95.7 The Game football insider, the great Jerry Rice, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Jerry, it's always a pleasure. We hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. Let's jump right into it. What did you think about yesterday's performance in Baltimore?
Well, hey, guys, it was a good played football game. Yes, we had some turnovers, and, you know, with Jimmy G, when he fumbled the ball, but I think we had a legitimate chance of winning that football game. So it's just like what Lowe said. They're not holding their head down or anything like that. We went in there. They fought hard. I think Kyle Shanahan, he hit it right on the nose. He said, hey, look, I was really proud of my guys for coming here and fighting this hard. But, you know, still, we got to find a way. Fourth and one. Lowe, you got to give that ball to that running back. You got to leave it up to that offensive line to get you that 1 yard. That hurt us, you know, doing this football game.
Sure.
It also hurt us doing the game against Seattle.
No question, Jerry. I couldn't agree with you more, especially in that type of climate. The running backs with Raheem Mostert was running very, very hard and getting to the perimeter, and where DBs and safeties now have to make a one-on-one tackle in space where, you know, where they don't have great footing. I love it. I think they should as well. But when you think about the teams that they lost to, you know, two good teams, two teams that are heading to the playoffs. You look at Baltimore, arguably could be the best team in football. You look at Seattle, I would say the second best team in NFC. Besides that, none of these teams are one, two games over 500 who they beat. Do you think this Saints team look and say, hey guys, against teams that are in first or teams that are on the top of the division, they haven't shown that they can win? Can they win? Do you think that's what one of those calling calls that the Saints would use for motivation? And you think the Niners understand what people are saying?
You know what? Basically, I look at it as being a measuring point with the Baltimore Ravens. This team is going to be the team that's probably going to be in the Super Bowl, and I'm still thinking Niners going to be there too. New Orleans, New Orleans is going to be a great test for us, but I feel the Niners can go into New Orleans and win that football game. So, you know, it's just the little things right now that's really costing us, and also, you know, causing us to lose ball games. You know, it's like that field goal that we missed. Then the fourth and one, you know, right before that timeout, I felt like they were going to just do the quarterback sneak. But then after that timeout, they came back in the shotgun, and I knew that was not the right decision there. So, you know, I think that was a measuring point for the 49ers. We know that I feel like they're going to face this team again, and it's going to be in the Super Bowl. And, you know, just like what happened with the Patriots last night. I mean, the Texans, they pretty much owned them. But with the San Francisco 49ers, the way they went into Baltimore and represented themselves, and they fought hard, and they still had a chance to win that football game. I'm sure, you know, they're going to come back. They're going to look at the film. They're going to be critical on themselves, and they're going to make changes, and they're going to get better as they go.
How tough is it to have to immediately go to New Orleans? I know they're going to travel to Miami or travel to Florida for the part of this week and then head to New Orleans for that game, but two tough road games back-to-back. How difficult is that physically and also mentally for the Niners?
It doesn't matter right now, guys. Everything is on the line right now. And you guys, you know, those guys are being paid the big contracts.
Sure.
So, you know what? They have to show up. Even if they had came back here to the West Coast, practiced all week, got back on the plane, and went to New Orleans, there's no excuses now.
Make it plain, Jerry.
And that's it. You know, it's time to put up. It's time to show up. And look, you have your own destiny in your hands. So now it's up to that team to just gel together and say, hey, look, yeah, you know, we lost a couple and we made some mistakes. We're going to correct those mistakes. But the next battle against New Orleans, we're going to go in there and we're going to take care of what we need to take care of, and that's to beat the New Orleans Saints.
Woo! Jerry Rice is brought to you by Xfinity. Jerry, what did you think about the sequence at the end of the first half? The Niners had the ball. They had just under 2 minutes, three timeouts. They're on their own 25. They played it pretty conservatively in a couple spots, and then they ended up missing a 51-yard field goal. Some felt they could have been more aggressive and tried to angle for more yardage. Lowe's made a great case that they weren't going to risk giving the ball back to Baltimore so Lamar right. Jackson could come down the field and score. Did you have any thoughts on how that first half ended?
My thing is whenever you control your own destiny, you have to be aggressive. I always felt like we were the team to take the initiative. And, yeah, that might have been a little conservative, but you got to go down and you got to feel like, hey, you know what, we're not going to get the ball back to him, or if we give the ball back to him, we're going to score a touchdown right now. That's the most important thing. We're going to put points on the board. And I that conservative nature is something that I just feel like shouldn't even be in football, because you have to control your own destiny. You have to be the aggressor on the football field and, you know, put your team in a position to win. And also you put ownership on those players to say, hey, look, the ball is in your hands now. You know, what you going to do with it? You know, are you going to move the ball downfield and win the game, or are you just, you know, just going to try to settle? So it also it builds confidence in your players.
Speaking of confidence, looks like Deebo Samuel's confidence is growing each and every week. What'd you make of the touchdown catch, Jerry, when he goes up and high points it ahead of Marcus Peters and makes a big play on fourth down?
I really like that, the way he attacked the football, but I need Deebo to make every catch. Every catch, anything that touches his hands, he should catch. And that's with all the receivers. It's the same thing. The conditions, you can't use that as an excuse. A wet football, you can't do that. You got to make, every time that ball touches your hands, you got to make the catch. You got to keep that momentum going. But with that touchdown catch, it was a really big catch for the Niners. And it just shows that this guy's capable of doing it all the time. So he just got to be, you know, just look at himself on film, maybe be a little critical and say, hey, look, whenever the ball comes my way, I'm going to make that catch. And that's it.
Jerry, when you're watching this team overall, when you look at the Niners, you think that they're the best team in the NFC. You believe that this was a preview of the Super Bowl, and so do I. But what would you like to see? Are you concerned with goal, his inability to make these field goals, or do you think it's just him getting healthy? Do you think now he's finally got his center and his holder? What do you think about what are some of the concerns, in your opinion, to make this team better?
My thing is, it's like you never want field goals. I'm going to be honest with you. You want touchdowns. But, you know, sometimes you got to be able to make the kick and do all that. You know, we always took the initiative that we wanted to put points on the board. We were going to score touchdowns. Then that made it a little bit easier for the kicker. Now, the only two questions I have is like those fourth downs and ones. I just feel like you got to leave it up to your offensive line and also your running back to, you know, get that 1 yard. We get those two plays, I feel like we might be undefeated right now. But and I'm sure, you know, those players, they're probably looking at it the same way. You know, they're probably saying that, you know what, we should be undefeated right now. But, you know, you just got to, you know, keep pushing forward, keep the focus, keep executing, keep getting better. And if you do that, you're going to score touchdowns, and you're not going to have to rely on a field goal or something like that to win a game.
Jerry, before we let you go, I'm curious. If the Seahawks beat the Vikings tonight on Monday Night Football, they will officially take over the NFC yeah. West, making the Niners the 5 seed right. in the NFC. They'd be a wild card team. As a player, if you were on the Niners right now, how intently would you be watching tonight's game? How aggressively would you be rooting for Minnesota?
I'll be honest. I never like to root for another team. I look at it like you control your own destiny. You worry about what's going on in your house. If the Seattle Seahawks should win the game tonight, so what? You know, so we got New Orleans coming up, then we got Seattle. So we pretty much, you know, control our own destiny. So I don't put a lot of stuff in watching other teams and hoping and stuff like that. I just feel like that's wasted energy. You have control of your own destiny, and it's up to those players to, you know, like I said, make those corrections and get ready for the next battle.
Well said. Now the last one for you, because there's a debate we've had going on in here. Would you rather be the one or two seed in the NFC-AFC and be banged up, or would you rather be a wild card and healthy? Basically what we're saying is, do you value the health or do you value the path more?
My thing is, you want home field advantage. Now, if that doesn't happen, now there's a different game plan, and you approach that in a different way. But the most important thing right now is to try to get home field advantage. If you do that, you know, now you only have to win two games at home and you go to the Super Bowl. So home field advantage always been a big focus for us over the years. And with the Niners, they're right in it. Yeah, it's going to get a little crazy and stuff like that. But if you have it in your heart and you have the desire to, you know, want to be the best, now is the time to really lock in and say, hey, let's go, guys. Let's go get this. Because, hey, we have a winning season already. The season is already. We've got a winning season. And at the start of the season, I said the Niners, they're going to do something special this year.
Beautiful stuff as always.
This is their opportunity to do something special right now. Now it's just up to those players to just say, hey, let's dig those cleats in and say, let's go get this.
That was Jerry Rice on with Jolo and Dibs yesterday. He was our interview of the day here on the pregame show. We'll be having the interview of the day where we'll play an interview from the day prior, just in case you missed it, because I know that a lot of you waking up at 5 o'clock, you can't always catch every single minute of 95.7 The Game, even though you should be on the Radio.com app. My question is, with that interview, and all the talk that was going on yesterday, they should have run it on 4th and 1. They should have run it on 4th and 1. Now, I don't know, say if, you know, Tevin Coleman was the guy yesterday and they didn't even give Raheem Mostert a chance, would that even be a question? You know, would us saying, look, we should have ran that ball on 4th and 1. If it was Tevin Coleman out there rather than Raheem Mostert, would you be saying the same thing? Because was talking earlier in the show, and I think that Raheem Mostert's proven time and time again that when he's given that opportunity and when he's told by Kyle Shanahan, look, we're going to be using you a lot more than just we'd use a normal backup running back, he's taken that opportunity and he's ran with it. I mean, no pun intended, but I mean, 19 carries for 146 yards, and any time he's gotten at least 9 carries in a game, let's just go through it one more time, 9 rushes for 40 yards, that was in week 1, 13 for 83, 12 for 79, 9 for 60. I think that Raheem Mostert's done enough to prove that when you give him these opportunities, he's going to thrive in it, and I think that now you got to be giving him just as many carries as Matt Breida, because Matt Breida's coming back from injury. You don't know if he'll be the same. And then also Tevin Coleman's just underperformed. And you can use Tevin Coleman in many different ways. He's a super versatile running back. He could be that dual threat. It's not like it's just a lost cause where you feel like it's kind of like with Jerick McKinnon, where you just don't know if that contract was even worth it. No, it's not like that with Tevin Coleman, because he got him for relatively cheap, and you can still use him in different ways. I think that right now it should be Raheem Mostert, and that should be the guy going forward. And maybe that's just being reactionary, but he's averaging the most yards per rush on the team, and he's up there in the NFL too. So I just think he's done enough to where you can use him more in the run game and then give Tevin Coleman more than 4 targets at the most, because that's the most he's gotten in any game this season so far. It's just 4, which you'd expect a little more than that when you're talking about a dual threat running back or just a running back that's purely used as a receiver. Look at Austin Eckler. The dude ends up with 13 receptions a game sometimes. Or Christian McCaffrey. He'll end up with 8 or 9 catches. I don't think it'd be in the wrong just to you know, say, hey, Tevin, we're going to be using you in the passing game a little more, and just give them a little more versatility on that aspect of offense. And if Matt Breida doesn't perform, then just, you know, you can give it more to Tevin Coleman and kind of switch between the two. But I think you got to make Raheem Mostert that constant, that guy that you're not afraid to go out there and just pound the rock with. Because on that 4th-and-1, I don't think we'd be asking, should we have ran it or and whatnot if Raheem Mostert just weren't in the game. If it was Tevin Coleman out there and you had Tevin Coleman going out at running back, I'd say, yeah, you probably should have passed the ball. Because I don't know if I'd be able to trust Tevin Coleman just to get that 1 yard. And it was a little over 1 yard. So that's just where I'm at with the running backs. I've found it fascinating after that game just to see where they stand when Raheem Mostert's given the opportunity. And then also you could use Jeff Wilson Jr. too. So they have a ton of depth at running back right now. We called it a three-headed monster, but Raheem Mostert, he's that monster with the biggest head. If I'm going to put it like that. And as they talked about, can't believe the Cowboys are up there atop the NFC East, and they're a higher seed than the Niners right now. That NFC East is so bad. But I'm watching that game yesterday, and the Seahawks managed to stay in it when you saw Dalvin Cook and Stephon Diggs down on the ground at the same exact time, you're like, okay, yep, the offense isn't going to do much. Stephon Diggs was able to come back into the game. Dalvin Cook wasn't, and I actually think Dalvin Cook is he underrated? Would you count him as underrated? I don't know. But without him, I didn't feel like the Vikings would be able to do anything. Then the Seahawks turned the ball over, gave the Vikings a little bit of a chance, but I don't think the score reflects actually how the game went. But I will say this, and I think about this every single Monday Night Football matchup. I would love it if Joe Tessitore would narrate my life. And that's because Joe Tessitore makes just the most inane things so exciting. He doesn't need to with football commentating. Like, he doesn't need to get that excited for a 4-yard reception. You know, he doesn't need to get excited for that. But could you imagine, like, waking up with Joe Tessitore and he's just like, he's going to get his coffee? It's like there are just certain situations where you're like, Joe, you didn't have to get that excited, but he's excited for everything. He is turning on his car heater bug. It's like, love Tessitore, but you don't need to get that excited. He's turning the steering wheel and putting his brakes on. Oh, my gosh. From the 510, we need to run the ball as much as possible. Yeah, but I'm thinking if you're going to run it, use Raheem Mostert so you can run it effectively. And you know, to get that play action going, that's what makes Jimmy Garoppolo so lethal. He's so good at executing a balanced offense that can actually, you know, where the line knows what they're doing. And he's really good at faking the handoff, by the way. Like, that's an underrated part of the play action that people don't take much notice of. That's what made Lamar Jackson. Count them. Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, Solomon Thomas. That's what had those guys tackling Mark Ingram and not Lamar Jackson, because he's just so good at hiding the football. I think that's an underrated part that we don't pay attention to. Real quick, want to get to Shanahan's press conference from yesterday, or conference call, rather, to the Bay Area media, and he talked about Richard Sherman's chances of playing.
Yes, definitely. I mean, Sherman, with what he's done over his career, us being with him now going into our second year, he's a guy that I would never rule out. I understand, though. I see him walking the way you guys did, too. So, yeah, a normal person, I probably would rule out just by the eye test. But, you know, you can never rule those type of guys out. They usually find a way to get there, and as long as they show us enough, then you usually give those guys opportunity. But that's also why we got to make sure that he's good, and sometimes we got to make tough decisions to protect them from themselves.
Now, Sherman did say that he will be playing, and I think that you can make the argument that now, no, he's not the most talented guy on defense. He's not the fastest, you know. He might be the strong. He actually, low key, might be the strongest hitter on the team. On the secondary. Low key. Sherman's always getting in there. But I think he is the most important guy on defense. I really do. And I just think what he brings, not only on the field, but off the field, keeping them together, I really think that he's the most important guy on that defense. I know that sounds crazy because of what they got at defensive line, but I think what Richard Sherman brings is just something that not everyone else can. All right, coming up, we are going to be having Joe Lowe and Dibs. Let me pull up their schedule as I completely forgot to do so. Hang on. From the 415, they didn't use Kittle as much as they should have. You don't know how much of that was on the Ravens defense, how much of that was on the Niners offense. It's going to be a rewatch Wednesday tomorrow where I rewatch these games and try and analyze what went on, especially with Jimmy Garoppolo and his passing attempts. All right, John Clayton coming up at 8 o'clock, Terrell Owens at 8:30, and Ian Williams in studio for an hour at 9 o'clock. Thanks for joining me, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow at 5 a.m.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.